You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hello and welcome to Brooklyn's Radio and the Just Women Show. This is our weekly programme when we get to chat with inspirational local ladies about their lives, their work and the challenges they have overcome to get to where they are today. I'm Anne Twist and today I'm joined by the lovely Amanda Weller. What are we going to be talking about today, Amanda?
Well, today we're going to be talking about channeling the challenges of being a new parent into an enterprising, locally supported business. After that, we'll then be chatting about learning Spanish and about the cultural experiences and exchanges. And finally, we'll be discussing death and dying with a professional volunteer whose expertise is in helping both people who are approaching the end of their life and their loved ones.
Wow, we've got a great show lined up, I think, today. So thank you very much, Amanda. And so to make a start, I'm delighted to present our first guest, Natasha Davis of the Clumsy Explorer. Thank you. Welcome to the show, Natasha.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. So, Natasha, we're going to be talking about your magazine, but perhaps we could start off by finding out a little bit more about you and your background. What have you been doing all these years?
Yeah, so I'm 32. I'm new to Surrey. We've only been here for a couple of years. Both my husband and I moved for work back in 2017, and that was pre-children. So we both work in the NHS. We're both sort of director level within the NHS and had some really exciting opportunities, and we moved here. And then about a year later, we found out that I was expecting. So our life has kind of taken a bit of a 360 degree turn, really.
Yes.
But it's been really exciting. It's been an amazing couple of years. But that's kind of what prompted us to get involved in setting up the magazine. So it was one of those things that we kind of found there was a huge gap in terms of some of the information that was out there. And I was moaning, as usual. And my husband said, well, just do something about it. So that's where the magazine was born from.
I know you've relocated from Cheltenham. So is it, do you think partly because you've relocated to a brand new area and you just don't have the knowledge of what's going on locally, and that's why you spotted the gap, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, so I'm originally from Gloucestershire and I grew up there obviously my whole life. I think when you become a parent, obviously your priorities change in terms of the sorts of things that you'll look at. So even though I grew up in Gloucestershire, I don't know that I necessarily would have been familiar with some of the organisations and businesses and actually some of the help that's out there that I would have wanted, because I just think it's, you're in this huge fog when you have children, and I just think that's one of the things that I talk about in the magazine, and one of the things that I talk about on my Instagram page is actually about, you know, being really authentic and being real and actually putting that kind of true picture out there. I think all too often there's very kind of glossy imagery and people don't necessarily share that honest view. So I think definitely it's been one of those things that we've stumbled across things because we've moved to a new area and we're curious. But yeah, I think it's just that new parenting thing as well.
Yes, because I think there's that thing of, you know, before you need to find out about all these things, you just don't know about them, do you?
No, absolutely. What is it they say? You're unconsciously incompetent because you don't need to know about them, as you say.
Well, I mean, that's so true. I mean, the whole baby experience, I mean, even having a baby, you know, you don't know about it unless you have close relatives, I suppose.
I don't know about it now, if I'm honest. I'm still kind of learning as I go. But I think certainly, you know, my mum's in her 50s and she still says that to me now, that, you know, everything changes. So, you know, with me having my little boy, my sister's got two children, it changes all the time. Yeah. And I think that's one of the big challenges as a new parent, is just the conflicting information, the misinformation, the lack of information. And that's one of the things that I really wanted to bring together. It's just a handy resource, really.
Yeah. So tell us about the magazine. So you set it up on the not advice of your husband, the suggestion of your husband, given that there was, you know, such a gap in your sort of knowledge of what was available locally. So it's an online magazine, is that right?
It's an online magazine. So obviously I was very busy on maternity leave. I had a baby to look after. But one of the things that I was really keen for is that I didn't spend all my time cooped up in the house with him, and that we actually got out. We saw a lot of Surrey, you know, places we could get to in the car, and we just started to explore and find new businesses. And the reason that we called it the Clumsy Explorer is because I'm probably one of the most clumsy people that you'll ever meet. I'll trip over my own shadow. It's that bad. But also having a new baby, he's obviously very clumsy. He had a little tumble just before I left the house. But we also stumbled across all these really exciting, unique businesses. A lot of them were sort of set up by parents, predominantly mums, I think, because when you're on maternity leave, you crave that normality, that thing to kind of just keep your brain ticking along whilst you're sort of doing all the baby stuff. And so it's been a really, really exciting journey. I've met some amazing people. And that was what we wanted to do, was kind of bring those more local businesses and those local people into sort of a central resource. And what I found with the second issue is that actually I'd managed to contact some sort of more inspirational mums and businesses that perhaps weren't, you know, not big franchises, but they are people that have just done the same sort of thing. So they've seen a gap, they've kind of tried to exploit that and actually make sure that people get access to things that you don't, and that, you know, nobody's really sort of fighting for and sort of spreading that message. So and I'll talk a little bit more about some specifics with that in a moment.
Yeah, I was going to say we'll probably get on to the specifics of what kind of content you've got in the magazine, but I'm quite interested in, obviously you're new to the area, you're building a network of mums. Is that how you're promoting the magazine, word of mouth, or obviously here on the radio?
But word of mouth. It's been a lot through Instagram. So if I'm honest, before February last year, I would go on Instagram maybe once every 3 or 4 months, and it would just be a picture that I liked and I wanted to use the filters and make it look a little bit better, and then I would share it on my personal Facebook. But a few people that I know that have kind of started to sort of build a business said, no, you need to do Instagram. Yeah. That's where everybody goes. That's where all the, you know, the people that are looking for things, that's where they go, because it's the hashtags that they'll look for. So, you know, Surrey businesses or Surrey mums, that's what people are looking for. That's where they'll find it. More so there than Twitter. It tends to be kind of the more the more kind of corporate businesses will use Twitter, but the sort of local businesses tend to go on Instagram a little bit more. So that in itself was a huge learning curve about hashtags and influencers and, you know, blogging and all of that sort of thing. And so I set the Instagram page up, and then I set up a WordPress blog, and then from that, that's where I host the magazine. So a lot of it has been word of mouth, but it's also been kind of meeting those people, and they sort of then put me in touch with other people. So it just kind of spirals and snowballs, which again is really exciting. And I think it's kind of proof that there was that gap for it.
Brilliant.
So you have articles and advertising, and it's pure. So are you... it's just downloads, no paper version at the moment?
No. So
plans?
So when I started it, when I did the first issue, my plan was I'd see how it went. And if it started to take off and it became successful and I felt that there was potentially the opportunity to generate a little bit of income to actually produce a paper version of the magazine, that was the route I wanted to go down. But through Instagram, I was really lucky that I actually made contact with Mother Pucker and Papa Pucker. They are a husband and wife duo who she basically became quite big through Instagram because she challenged the status quo with flexible working. She was a mum who was absolutely burnt out and essentially said, no, I'm not doing it anymore. I want to have that family balance and that family work-life balance. And her and her husband started this campaign called Flex Appeal. The book actually comes out tomorrow. It's called Where's My Happy Ending, and it's already on pre-order for me. But where I'd been speaking with them online, Anna is actually going to be my cover story this month, but her husband said to me, there isn't money in making this a paper copy for you. What he said is that, you know, even some of the bigger brands now are going more online because people don't want to have printed things. They want to have things that are accessible on smartphones and things like that. So he just said, you know, you seem to be like doing well with it, so stick with that and don't try and make it into a paper copy. So I've kind of followed that. And last month we had over 1,000 downloads in the last issue. So for the second issue, I'm absolutely thrilled to bits with that.
Yeah, that's great. And presumably you're managing to attract advertisers on that basis?
So I've been putting messages out on Instagram just to sort of get content, and I'm getting a lot more inquiries now, which is brilliant. So I think it will get to the point that I can start to actually generate a little bit of money with it, which will then mean that I can sort of increase the software and, you know, potentially work with some bigger brands in terms of advertising. And so we've got lots of things that are sort of quite exciting in the pipeline in terms of giveaways and things like that. So that's where I want to get to, is that any money that we sort of start to generate, we can actually put back into the magazine via competitions or things like that, so that it just becomes a kind of a self funding thing, yeah. Essentially.
How very inspiring. This is wonderful. So can you give us a taste of the sort of things that are in the magazine?
Yeah, so as I've said, the next issue, my cover story is Mother Pucker and Papa Pucker. And she's going to write something around actually juggling parenthood and work life, and particularly obviously their campaign. And that's something that's really important to me. I was really lucky that returning to work after maternity leave in December, I was able to negotiate with a new role, doing part-time hours. And my boss is lovely. She's so flexible, she's really supportive, and that for me was something that was really important around a family. So that's one of the things that I'd spoken to Anna, or Mother Pucker, that's one of the things I'd spoken to her about doing an article in some of the previous editions. So the first one, we had a local they're not a supermarket, they're a local convenience store, but they basically do everything is recycled or reusable, or okay. You can essentially take all of, like, for example, your household products and refill them, so your detergents, your washing up liquids, your toilet cleaners, those sorts of things.
Is that locally here in Weybridge?
Not Weybridge, they're called Born From Necessity, they're in Molesey.
Oh right, okay.
So they were in the first one. Another friend of mine now is a lady called Natalie. She's got a business online called Latched. She saw a gap was on maternity.
Yeah.
So she works in sports in a university, and one of the things she found when she had her little girl was that there was this huge gap for sportswear and warm wear that was breastfeeding friendly. So she created sports bras. She's got leggings that are postpartum and pregnancy friendly, so they've got really high waisted and they're really stretchy, and they've got pockets,
yeah,
so if you go to soft
great.
play, they've got hoodies that you can feed in if you're out walking the dog and it's -1, or if you're just out for a walk with the baby because they won't go to sleep and you're trying to get them to go to sleep by going for a walk. So it was a gap for her,
right?
And her business is just over a year old, and so again she did everything through Instagram. I've been really lucky to have some quite big names. So there's a local celebrity who lives in Addleston called Susie Amy. She was in Footballers' Wives.
Yeah.
So she was my cover story last month, and she was talking about her new her journey to being a new mum. So that was really good. And I actually met her on a breastfeeding workshop at the local hospital. So that was it was fab to get her involved. She's really lovely. Then Anna Mather, who I talked about, who's a local psychotherapist. I've got a lovely lady called Emily Clark, who's a photographer.
I think you've been ideally poised for this business, really, haven't you? Because you've been a new mum and you've been new to the area. So, you know, that thirst for knowledge, you know, if we were new mums in this area, we'd just probably still go about our business, wouldn't we? I mean, we'd meet people.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the way you've sort of sought out you know, new businesses, haven't you, really?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, just new things to discover, you know, as part of being a new mum and moving to a new area. So,
and I think the one thing for me that's been really important, I mean, I'm really lucky, I've got such a great support network. We did NCT here, so although we were new to the area, we've got such a great group of friends. But one of the things that I think people really struggle with, and you know, particularly postnatal depression is on the rise. I think it's, again, there's a huge stigma attached to it. As I said, social media, I think, has this real glossy finish on it that doesn't necessarily reflect real life. And I think that, you know, sometimes when it's 2 a.m. and your baby won't go to sleep and you're scrolling through Instagram, you can just feel like you're failing. And so that's one of the things that I really wanted to try and support people that were sort of new businesses or what have you, but to bring it together, because one of the things that has really kept me going is the support that I've found from professionals or friends or local businesses. You know, I've just found that the more you talk to people, the more people are happy to help. So, you know, a big thing for me is that, you know, women supporting women, and, you know, small businesses supporting small businesses. I just think it's really important, and I think, you know, we've all kind of got a bit of a moral obligation to do it. So it's been one of the things that I've just loved it, and it's been so nice meeting such lovely diverse people as well.
Yeah, and I bet they love being interviewed.
So yeah, some of them, I think. So some people are not so so happy, and not necessarily happy to have their photo taken and stuff, but yeah, everybody's been great.
Wonderful. And how far ahead do you think, as far as your planning goes, and if what is it, every couple of months or monthly?
So it's quarterly. Yeah, so one of the things that was really important to me was it was a slow living magazine. One, because I don't have the time to do it monthly. If I could, I would. But I actually think there's something about, you know, something that's timeless that doesn't expire. So, you know, if you read the first edition I did, it's not quite as polished as the second edition, but actually the articles will still be relevant. The businesses are still, you know, everything that was in there, it might be a different time of the year, but actually it's still relevant information. And that was something that's really important. Again, particularly as a parent, I mean, I don't know the last time I finished a book. So, you know, it's one of those things I just wanted it to be relevant. Ongoing.
Yeah, you can dip in and out. That's ideal,
absolutely,
isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I had a look at both last night, and I'm looking forward to seeing the March one. I mean,
you
know, we're both mothers of much older children, so a lot of it, you know, a bit like we were saying earlier, just discovering new things for parenthood now. I mean, you know, it's all changed.
I didn't want it to be specifically babies either. I wanted it to kind of cover a range of people, because also, although I'm a new mum, I'm also a wife, I'm also a daughter, and, you know, so I wanted it to also cover other businesses that, you know, not just for parents, but predominantly it is sort of around parenting.
Well, Natasha, would you believe we are running out of time? So it's been great chatting with you. I'm sure plenty of our listeners want to have a look at this magazine. So how do they find it? Because you've got your blog, and then we've got the magazine link. It's a separate thing, isn't it?
So my website is The Surrey Mumma, and it's mumma.com.
Yeah.
And on Instagram, I'm at The Surrey Mumma.
Okay.
The magazine on Instagram is at the.clumsyexplorer, but probably the easiest way is just to find it through my website, which is thesurreymumma.com.
Perfect. So thank you very much, Natasha. Lovely to have you on the show, and best of luck with the magazine.
Can't wait
to see the next edition.
Thank you.
That was Natasha Davis of The Clumsy Explorer. We're going to take a short break now, but please stay with us as we are going to be talking about learning Spanish with Sandra Aviles of Pepe and Tete.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio.
The past few months have been hard on everyone, including our kids. But there are lots of things we can do to support them. Every Mind Matters will help you find what's right for your kids, whether it's listening to them talk about the challenges they're facing or helping them develop skills to cope with their emotions. Supporting your children's mental well-being can help them boost their mood, feel good about themselves, and be more ready for life's challenges. For NHS-approved tips and advice, visit Every Mind Matters.
I'm so glad you're open.
Thank goodness you're here.
Do you ever close?
Did you know the pharmacy at 20 Church Street, Weybridge is open 100 hours every week to meet your immediate medical needs? We're here for you from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. weekdays, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturdays, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sundays. Our friendly and knowledgeable team can provide you with the advice you need, as well as helping you with repeat prescriptions, all the over-the-counter products you would expect, and if you can't get in to visit us, we will deliver to you. The Pharmacy, 20 Church Street, Weybridge. We're here when you need us, 100 hours every week.
Hello, my name's Sarah Chaplin, and every Thursday night I host a show called Jazz London Live at 10 o'clock until midnight, and each week I play a selection of jazz, funk, fusion and Latin. I feature an interview in the first hour of the show with somebody on the British jazz scene, a gig guide rounding up the gigs in the week to come, and in the second hour of the show there's Album of the Week, in which I play three tracks from a brand new album that's just come out, and also a long track in the second hour of the show to help you wind down to bedtime on a Thursday evening. It gets a bit more mellow towards the end of the show. So if you love jazz, you're going to love this show, Jazz London Live on Brooklyn's Radio. If you're not sure whether you like jazz, give it a try. You might find there's some tracks in there that you really love.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women. I'm Amanda Weller, presenting alongside Anne Twist. I'd now like to welcome Sandra Aviles of Pepe and Tete. Lovely to have you here, Sandra. Can you start by telling us a little about your background and what drew you to teaching?
Okay. Well, hello and thank you for having me. I did my teaching degree in Spain, where I am from. And I also was a tennis coach in the past. So I spent a few years teaching and teaching tennis and then studying at uni. And then I came here 7 years ago to the UK to improve my English, and then I stayed.
Ah, okay. So when you were teaching, what did you, were you teaching just tennis, or were you teaching in a school, or what were you doing?
I was teaching only tennis because I did my degree while I was teaching, And then the system in Spain is a bit different. So you need to do a big exam after that. And then I was waiting to do an exam and wait for a place. But it's very different from England. So I couldn't work in a school. And then that was also one of the reasons why I came to the UK, so that I could improve my English and then maybe go back to teaching in Spain. But then...
Didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
So did you come here to work in a school as a teaching assistant or something like that? Or what was the aim when you came to the UK?
Yeah. Well, the main aim was to improve my English.
Yes.
I didn't know if I was going to be here for a year or a bit more. I didn't say exactly for how long. But the first thing I did was being an au pair. Okay. So I was living with an English family, and that was the way I improved much quicker. Yeah. And then I went to Brooklands College as well for lessons. And, yeah, I was living in Walton and Thames.
Okay. I have to say the best way to learn a language is definitely to immerse yourself, isn't it? I know that from personal experience, yes. So did the when you were living with family, did they speak Spanish or could you not cheat?
No, I couldn't. No, they were English and they didn't speak any other languages, so only English. Yeah, that's why I improved quite a lot.
It is. It's the best way, really. Mm. It's the only way, isn't it?
Yeah.
So how long have you been here now?
I have been in the UK for 7 years, so quite a long time now.
Okay, so you came here as an au pair, and then you moved into what? Obviously, you've got the business. Mm-hmm. Have you had the business for 7 years, or something happened in between? Or
yeah, so after being an au pair, while I was an au pair, I did voluntary work in a school in Hersham, and then after the voluntary work, I got a job as a TA, so a teaching assistant.
Yeah,
and then I left the family. And I started as a TA for 2 years.
Sorry, you did what for two years?
For 2 years, I did the teaching assistant job.
Okay.
And then after that is when I decided to try the Spanish, my business that I have now, Pepe Antete. So I started and I saw how it, you know, I thought, I'm going to start and see how it goes.
Yeah.
And then I got some students and slowly I grew up and then I left the school. And I did my full-time job
as a Spanish teacher.
As a Spanish teacher at Pepe Antete, yeah.
Okay, so I just have to ask, Pepe Antete, how did you come by that name and why?
Okay, so, well, we were thinking of a name, my husband and I, and we wanted something original rather than, you know, the typical Spanish something or, you know, hola amigos or something that you can see around sometimes. And then... I am very proud that it was me, not my husband. I got the name. So Pepe is my dad's name. And Tete, I think you know Spanish, no one?
Yeah, I do, but I can't remember what Tete means. It's short for something, isn't it?
No, it's not really a word, but so you know uncle is tío.
Oh, yes.
Or Tito.
Tito, yeah.
But then my nephews call my brother instead of tío, call him Tete.
Ah, okay.
So it's kind of a nickname.
Yeah.
So I thought Pepe and Tete is easy to pronounce. It kind of rhymes and, you know, and people normally remember quite easily. So we chose Pepe and Tete.
Yeah. I've got to ask you because we've been talking about you came here as an au pair and then we got to Pepe and Tete and you said my husband. And I thought, oh, we haven't mentioned a husband. So did you marry an English chap or a Spaniard or something else? Someone else?
Something else.
Something else entirely.
We have a bit of a mix. He's from Uganda, so he's African.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, he has been here for a much longer time than me, but he's from Uganda, so yeah.
Okay.
We are a very mixed family.
Multicultural family, yes. Great. So lots of languages being spoken in your house.
Yeah, well, yeah, two at the moment.
Two sometimes, at the moment, because you're...
Sometimes three, but... Yeah, between us, we always speak in English.
Okay, and you've got a baby who's...
Yeah. Yeah, he's 10 months.
10 months. So he's going to be brought up trilingual?
We wanted trilingual. We are doing bilingual. I always talk to him in Spanish.
Okay.
And my husband wanted to do Luganda, which is the language that he speaks in Uganda. But he's doing a bit, not all the time. He's doing a bit, so for sure bilingual and then maybe trilingual.
And do you speak other languages as well?
No, I just know a bit of Italian and French because they are similar and I studied them quite a long time ago.
But easy to get confused as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So tell us more about Pepe and Tete. Obviously, it started presumably just doing some private tuition for people, and then mm-hmm. has grown into what it is today. And there's lots available, isn't there, for both children and adults? Let's talk a little bit about what the kind of lessons that mm-hmm. you're offering.
Okay, so yeah, we are quite varied. So we teach from toddlers to adults. Yeah. So all ages, really, and levels. We do GCSE, A levels, everything. So our youngest is 2, our oldest is 83, which is
83.
Is a lady.
I love that.
Yeah, it's a lady in Hesham. Jill, I don't know if she will be listening to this, but of course, there is no age to learn. You can learn even when you are older.
Sure.
And we teach, we teach everyone, and we do private lessons, we do group lessons, we do full immersions, we take people to Spain to immerse so they can learn quicker.
Yeah, and I see you do Spanish and tennis combined lessons.
And yeah, so that's a camp that we do in Spain.
It's not in Mallorca, is it?
No.
I'm not going there.
It's not at Nadal's academy. No.
Oh, well.
I would like to, but it's not there.
Okay.
No, it's in south of Alicante. So okay. It's, yeah, by the sea, very nice. And then we also do, since last summer, we do the opposite. So we bring Spanish people here and they do the immersion here in English.
Great. So I know that from doing a bit of reading up that you're very keen on cultural exchange and all of that. So that obviously feeds into all of that, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, that's what we think about learning a language, that it's not only learning the language, you need to learn, or it's nice if you learn about the culture as well. That's what I did when I came here. And of course, now that I live here, you immerse in the culture and you are part of the culture as well. So when people come to Spain, they can learn that. It's not only the language, but also, you know, what we do or how we celebrate a party or how we eat as a family. And normally people really enjoy it because it's different and they normally love the food and, you know, and it's a bit difficult sometimes because we speak fast. But they
yes.
Like.
Yes, you do.
Yes, we do. I know.
So with these immersion programs, do you house people in with local families, and how does that work? Could talk us through, and how long would it before that, you know, was it a week or two, or is it longer than that? How does it work?
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, they stay with families, so I always choose families that I know. The same as when they come here. So I always make sure that I know the family. And then, you asked me about the... this is baby brain.
How long it's for, I think it's
okay. Oh, yeah, how long? Yes. Well, it can be as long as you like. But normally we recommend at least 2 weeks because one is...
Not
it goes
longer.
Very quickly. And then at least two... Normally people are coming for 2 weeks. But it can be longer if they want to, so... It depends on people's holidays and all the stuff, yeah.
And again, as you said earlier, that's the best way to learn. Just
yeah.
in at the deep end with
exactly.
people who don't speak your language and you have
exactly.
to learn to speak theirs.
Yeah, I always make sure, I didn't say it, but I always make sure that the family, they don't, no one at the house. Now it's more difficult because people are starting to speak more English. But then, you know, there are always people, especially the parents, maybe don't speak it, as my parents, for example, don't do, so... They go there.
So the people that come here from Spain, are they largely children or are they adults? Or
well, I started last year, so they were all teenagers. Yeah, they were between 13 and 17.
Right.
Yeah, but it can be for anyone, really, but because it's quite new,
yeah,
we only got teenagers, but yeah, it can be for anyone, yeah.
Great. And mm-hmm. and I know looking at your website that some of the other things you offer are tuition for kids who are doing exams. So mm-hmm. you go into schools, I think, and support sort of GCSE. Is that right?
Yeah, but we do it privately.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
But is it in schools or do they come to you?
We do some school clubs,
yeah.
but that's for younger children. So, you know, when you do an extra activity after school.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
But that's normally primary. And then we do the GCSE or A-levels, but it's normally at private homes that they need support.
Yeah,
so
okay.
the parents look for tuition.
Right. Okay.
And I also read that you have a corporate side as well.
Yep.
Yeah. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So that's our new thing. It's quite recent that we decided to do it. So it's Spines for Companies.
Yeah.
So we are looking for companies that would like to provide Spanish for their employees. Wherever it can be, because they have businesses in Spain or South America, or just, you know, as an extra thing for them to learn, to try to socialize also as a group inside the company.
Nice idea.
Yeah. So we are working on that one.
I was particularly interested in your Spanish language exchanges. So this is for people who haven't got the time or perhaps the inclination to have dedicated lessons, but they want to spend time with other Spanish speakers, or maybe they've learnt in the past and they're rusty. That'll be me. How often are those held, and where do you do those?
That's normally once a month.
Okay.
So it's a meetup in a pub, or normally at in the evening at 7:30. Okay. So yeah, exactly. It's people that cannot commit for a weekly lesson.
Yes.
So they come and they practice. So, I mean, normally you need to have a bit of a level. If you are a complete beginner, you cannot talk.
Yeah, of course.
You need to be kind of intermediate or a bit rusty, and then slowly you...
It comes back.
So
where do you hold those? Because you're based in... Is it Hersham?
I live in Weybridge.
Oh, Weybridge.
Yeah, so we are not doing it at the moment, just now. But it's normally... It was in... what's the name of the Handspear? In near the station.
Oh, yes.
We have done it there before.
Okay, that's a good venue.
And we have done it before, where I think in Walton, in the pub near the station as well.
Okay, yeah. So it's not happening at the moment, but it's...
At the moment, it's not, but I'm working on it, because now I have two teachers helping me, because I have been on maternity.
Yes, of course.
And then we are always trying to start new things, and that is one, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So you have, obviously you've got a couple of people helping you. Is it mainly you, or you've got full-time staff, or...?
Yeah, well, I have two ladies helping me, so they are both teachers from Spain as well, so they are native speakers, and they are helping me with kind of part-time, a bit more than part-time. Yeah, it's not full-time, but, you know, with teaching, you need to prepare lessons, and you need to have time for that as well. So, yeah, I'm only organizing everything. Only. It's quite a lot with a baby, but it's fine.
Yeah.
Admin, all that stuff, and then they are teaching.
Yeah. It's a lot to manage.
Yeah.
So you're doing the planning and ideas for the future then as well, and your expansion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we are always trying to think of more things that we can add. That's why the companies, apart from doing the companies here, we also would like to take them to Spain. So the same full immersion for people can be also for companies or for people at companies, and do it as a group inside the company.
Brilliant. And you've got the formula, and just turn it around to be the other way around language-wise, I suppose. Yes.
Yeah. Exciting.
Yes.
Who would have thought 7 years ago when you came here and started working as an au pair that this is where you'd be in seven years' time?
Probably at that time I wouldn't think that, but it's good, yeah.
We're running out of time. We're going to wrap up in a minute. I just wanted to ask you, are you still playing Spanish? Still playing? Of course you're playing Spanish. Are you still playing tennis?
Not at the moment. I'm not playing tennis because I don't have a lot of time now with a baby.
No.
I would love to, I love tennis, I like it,
So we've loved having you here in the studio, much better than chatting in a field from when we met you previously. What was it, the Weybridge Cake Off, wasn't it, last year?
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
Yeah. We'd love to have you again.
Yeah.
Should anyone want to find out about learning Spanish with you, could you just tell us the website address?
Yeah, so it's www.pepeandtete.com.
Okay, so that's PEPEANDTETE.com.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you very much. So that was Sandra Avilés of Pepe and Tete. We've got another ad break coming up, so please don't go too far away, as we will be right back chatting with Molly Taylor, who is an end-of-life doula and chaplain.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio.
There's no doubt that running a business is tough, but at the moment, it's even tougher than ever. And that's where we can help. Plan C are a team of Surrey business professionals offering free advice for local businesses during these testing times. We offer solutions to your most pressing business challenges. From marketing to human resources, PR to Google Ads, business strategy to website design. Post your questions at yourplanc.co.uk. We'll put them to the team and come back to you with our thoughts observations, and most importantly, practical solutions. It's a free service, so why not see if we can help? www.yourplanc.co.uk.
As well as listening live to Brooklands Radio, you can listen on demand to our podcasts of interviews and feature programmes at brooklandsradio.co.uk. Check out the programmes and features by clicking on the show logos and keep up to date with the latest podcasts on our latest podcasts page. The Sound of Surrey, on demand at brooklandsradio.co.uk.
Hello, I'm Lisa Rollin. Join me for my show Classical Crossover on Thursdays at 7 o'clock for 1 hour of beautiful uplifting classical music handpicked by me for you, as well as insightful interviews with fellow musicians and their wonderful gig stories. So join me, Lisa Rollin, on Thursdays at 7 o'clock for Classical Crossover on Brooklands Radio.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Anne Twist, together with Amanda Weller. I'm very happy now to welcome to the programme Molly Taylor, who is a professional volunteer around the subject of death and dying. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. So perhaps you could just give us a little bit of background about you and an insight into sort of what led you into this current role.
Okay. I'm probably somebody that as a child was always wondering, why am I here? What's it all about?
Oh, okay.
And I questioned and questioned. I eventually became a teacher, primary school teacher. I got married. I was corporate wife. I lived in different countries. And with the birth of my first child, I died. I nearly died. Or I did die, but came back. And that experience at the age of 24 lodged with me. But then, of course, life took over and I was teaching. I was tutoring, corporate wife. We travelled. We lived in different countries. But eventually I got divorced and back to teaching. And then I got cancer. And I was a cancer survivor. So the question of death came up twice quite strongly. When I retired, and I retired to Dorking, lovely Dorking, I was searching around for what could I do. I wanted to work for a charity, but I had skills, and what should I do? And in a little local magazine, I found an advert to join a charity called the Brigitte Trust. And the Brigitte Trust are concerned with people with life-threatening illnesses. And they train their volunteers, about 6 weeks training. It's quite expansive, and I love that. And then you go out and you're working with families, or sometimes it's people completely on their own, and you go in and you're with them for maybe 3 hours a week doing various things. And I did that for about 4 years. And somewhere in there, I was sitting with somebody whose carer, wife, had rushed out because my 3 hours with her was probably the only time in the week that she had to herself and was precious. But this gentleman was very ill, and I thought, my goodness, if he dies while I'm sitting here, actually, I don't know what to do. Well, I knew the main things to do, but within myself, I didn't feel I knew enough. And from that, I got interested in training to become an end-of-life doula. EOLs, end-of-life doulas, are all over the place. There's more of them in America, probably, but it is expanding in the UK, and I trained in West Sussex. And again, really, really looking at life and death, because, of course, the two are intertwined. Mm. There's a coming in and there's a going out. And you could almost say that when you're born, you're becoming. But also when you die, there's a becoming. But it's a different sort of becoming. And I got very interested in that correlation between life and death, the entrance and the exit. Or is the exit the entrance? and the entrance to the exit. It's a paradox.
So this has been carried through all your life. If you as a child felt, you know, the big questions about why are we here, and then obviously you had two near-death experiences by the sounds of things. So you've had these sort of question marks throughout your life, and you
absolutely, absolutely, okay. And also there is, when somebody is dying, there is correspondence for what we go through when we're being born. So if I say, for instance, that we are told or we know that the very first sense that a baby experiences is sound. But we also know that when somebody is in a coma, they say that the last sense to go is sound. So keep talking to your yes. loved one, because they can still hear you. Then from that, maybe we're thinking about the tunnel experience. We come through a birth, unless we have a cesarean, we come through a birth tunnel. When I went through my near-death experience, I went out of the body, and it was like I was going down a tunnel. It was amazing. It was a different state of consciousness completely, but I was going down a tunnel and I wanted to go, and it was beautiful. And all had, all around me was this feeling of great love. But I had a choice. And the choice was, yes, you can go, but can you hear the sound of your unborn child crying to be born? So obviously I came back and I remember going back into the room and looking down on my body and my distraught husband and going back in, and of course there was pandemonium and the baby was born. Now, when somebody dies, being born is the baby's head is coming down the tunnel, isn't it? And it's born out into the world. There's another correspondence here along the lines of a baby, such a little baby, thinks everything it thinks inside itself and everything it thinks outside itself are the same and are both it. So it's not distinguishing between the two. But after it's born, it learns or it thinks it's separate. And we individualise about the age of two, and we learn language, and we think we're on our own. We all think we're little units on our own. And I really rather hope that when you die, the opposite happens, and that as you go along the tunnel back out again, you begin to know that actually, no, you are one. A bit like the water analogy, the spray from the sea, a droplet rises up out of the sea and it's on its own, and then it falls back into the sea and knows it's one of the immenseness. Do you see that correlation?
Yeah, totally. I do very much understand what you're saying. I think that's, makes total sense to me, I have to say.
So that, you know, it's that state of consciousness, if you like. Mm. And there are other things. So for me, death has no fear, but what I have learnt through my doula training, through experience, and also what I do now is I'm a hospital chaplain, which surprised me, of course, and it shouldn't have done, but how many people actually are very frightened of death? It's very frightening to go into the unknown. And we plan for life. But very often we do not think, we don't even want to think about death. It's a taboo subject in our culture.
Yeah, that's true. We don't talk about it much, do we, particularly in this country?
No, it could be catching.
Do you think it's different in other countries?
Yes, it is different.
You said you've lived overseas. Have you seen the way people treat death differently?
Well, I've lived overseas in Europe and North America, so no, it's the same there.
Same, okay.
But I've talked to other people, especially in African countries, and because death is such a part of life, it's talked about. It's one with them, and I think we could learn such a lot from that. But here it's sanitized. I think the statistic is something like 2/3 of people would like to die at home, but only 1/5 of them do. We send our old people, they go into hospital, yes. they go into hospice.
And they don't come
it's
out.
Done somewhere else.
Yes.
And so the families and the children, they're not acquainted with death, if I could put it like that. A century ago, we were. People died at home and the family all knew about it, and it wasn't a shock because there was that experience. And when somebody in the family died, they drew the curtains. They drew the curtains in the front windows. So everybody in the road knew that that person had died, and they would come in and support it. Now, would you know? Would you see somebody's blinds have gone down or curtains have been drawn?
I wonder why we do it like that. Is it because of the care that people need when they're coming towards the end? You know, it's better served in the hospice environment? Or why do you think we do that?
Well, yes, medical science is such these days. It can keep people alive for a very long time. People live busy, busy lives. They have busy jobs. It's a different environment that we live in. But the fact is, death is removed from us. So we have little of experience of it. And in soap operas and TV and things, it's not glamorised, but it becomes... an event. It's exciting, it's dramatic, but actually a death isn't so dramatic.
No, it's not. I was just thinking about your work as a doula. You're very much communicating with a person who's coming towards the end of their life, but is the big challenge possibly sort of dealing with the relatives?
It's both.
Is it?
You can't remove one from the other. Because they are intertwined.
I was just wondering whether maybe, you know, some people who are, particularly if they're elderly, you know, that they realise that, you know, that their life is coming to an end, well, I mean, possibly, that, you know, the family don't always accept it. Do they welcome your
yes,
input?
Some people do. Some people are in complete denial.
Yeah.
And we're going back to planning here now, because if we planned for our deaths and we talked about it and people knew what we wanted, it's a lot easier. If we don't talk about it, and we're not allowed to talk about it, because relatives will say to their dying ones, oh, no, you'll be fine. We're going to do this. We're going to go on holiday. This is going to happen. And, of course, it isn't. Mm. And everybody knows it isn't. So instead of getting on with, well, what would you like for your funeral? What would you like us to say? What legacy would you like? Have you thought about the meaning of your life? This is doula work. It's drawing out of both the one who is dying and the family what they really want. Or maybe they don't want, then the work of the doula is just to be the witness to the suffering, the compassionate presence, just being with, not necessarily doing, not necessarily saying.
Okay.
Wow. Gosh, yes.
Powerful
so
stuff.
It's yeah. So it takes quite extraordinary people actually to do that, doesn't it? I think.
Yeah. Well, also, and I think maybe the subject of death is growing in popularity. Well, it's popularity. There's more knowing now. There's been some amazing books out. One of the patrons of the doula movement is Catherine Mannix. She wrote a book with the end in mind. There's actually a whole chapter on leading people through what happens as you're dying. And sometimes as a chaplain, I actually say to people, has anybody told you exactly what's going to happen? And they haven't, and they need it. The physical things. There was Greg Wise, Another Kind of Loving, talking about his sister. And there's a very recent book by Rachel Clark called Dear Life, A Palliative Care Doctor. So more and more information around these subjects. And then there's other things that I find, especially with my experience. On the 24th of December on Radio 4, there was something called A Bright Yellow Light. And it was a chap called Nadim Adnan Laparos, whose daughter died by having sesame seeds in a prêt-à-manger roll.
Yes.
And he actually relates her dying and what he saw. And he saw, well, you need to listen to it. It's still there.
Wow.
What he saw. And then there's other death phenomena. There's so much now.
And you've got a poem, I think.
Yes.
To read to
I
us.
I have got a poem.
Yes. And this, just as a bit of an intro to the poem, this is, earlier on you were talking about the correlation between death and birth. And this sort of highlights this, I think. Is that right?
It does.
Okay.
I think you need to hear it.
Yeah,
although, please. I'm sure if anybody really wanted to find it, they could They could. It's twins talking in the womb. Twins were talking in the womb. Tell me, do you believe in life after birth? Of course, after birth comes life. Perhaps we're here to prepare for what comes after birth. Forget it. After birth, there is nothing. From there, no one has returned. And besides, what would it look like? I don't know exactly, but I feel that there are lights everywhere. Perhaps we walk on our own feet and eat with our mouth. That is utterly stupid. Walking isn't possible. And how can we eat with that ridiculous mouth? Can't you see the umbilical cord? And for that matter, think about it for a second. Postnatal life isn't possible because the cord is too short. Yes, but I think there is definitely something, just in a different way than what we call life. You're stupid. Birth is the end of life, and that's it. Look, I do not know exactly what will happen, but Mother will help us. The Mother? Do you believe in the Mother? Yes. Don't be ridiculous. Have you seen the Mother anywhere? Has anyone seen her at all? No, but she is all around us. We live within her. And certainly it is thanks to her that we exist. Well, now, leave me alone with this stupidity, right? I believe in Mother when I see her. You cannot see her, but if you're quiet, you can hear her song. You can feel her love. If you're quiet, you can feel her caress, and you will feel her protective hands.
Wow. That's quite thought-provoking, isn't it?
Very much so. What a way to come to the end of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. We're all out of time, I think, aren't we? It's been amazing chatting with you. It's very thought-provoking, as I say. So if there's no website or anything, is there? But I think where you've trained might give us some insight into...
Endoflifedoulas.com.
Yeah.
Brigitte Trust. You know, yeah. www.brigittetrust.com.
Yeah.
You know, Princess Alice Hospice, where yeah. I did training for end of life.
So if people feel the need for an end of life doula, that's probably the best route for them to...
Yes, or just help at home with the Brigitte Trust.
Okay.
Or hospice. They are amazing.
Fantastic. So that was Molly Taylor, who read us an amazing poem and is a volunteer around the subject of death and dying. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're most welcome. I really enjoyed it.
Good. Yeah, I can tell. So it just remains for me to thank all of our guests today on Just Women. That's Natasha Davis, Sandra Aviles and Molly Taylor. And thank you also to my lovely fellow presenter, Amanda Weller, and to Graham Laycock, who has produced the show today.
Thank you, Anne. We've had some great guests today. As ever, we are always on the lookout for interesting ladies to be guests on our show. So if that's you or someone you know, please do get in touch with us via justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk with all the information.
Yes, please do get in touch. It's a lot less scary than people think. And if you'd like to find out about past guests, please go to the Just Women section of our website, brooklandsradio.co.uk. And to find out what's coming up, please take a look at our Facebook page and don't forget to follow us. So thank you for listening. Please do join us again next week at 1 o'clock. Goodbye from me, Anne Twist.
And goodbye from me, Amanda Weller.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio.